Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we go to Prey, Montana, the home of the iconic Chico Hot Springs Resort and Day Spa, established in 1900. This is a place of memories and gatherings, holding the sentiment of family and nostalgia and fitting into the spirit of the holidays. We talk to owners Cullen and Sebring Davis, become acquainted with Chef Dave Wells, and learn about Sebring's new book, The Western Kitchen, seasonal recipes from Montana Chico Hot Springs Resort. Come with me to the Paradise Valley just outside Livingston to the End of the Road Hotel under the watch of Immigrant Peak. We talk to Cullen Davis, who in 1995 became general manager for then-owners Mike and Eve Art, to becoming an owner himself with his wife in 2016. Here's how it began for Cullen.
I had been in this business, and my background was in food and beverage, but also in historic hotels. And I knew Mike and Eve. You know, we'd met a number of times just through the business and become friends. And it was actually Sebring and I were just starting to date. And she called me and she said, I've heard that Chico Hot Springs is looking for a general manager. And I picked up the phone and called Mike, and he said, we'd love to talk to you. And I actually think when I came over for my first interview, I was smart enough to bring my dog. And the Arts are so animal friendly that I think the dog actually got me the job. to be honest about it. Yeah, so it was a phone call from Sebring, and I was in Red Lodge, and she was over here, and was trying to get closer to home, and I had been coming to Chico since 1973, and had always loved it. So it was just a natural love. Family-owned properties. I love historic properties, and Mike and Eve and I hit it off really quickly, and it was a strong relationship from the start.
Cullen's dog's name was Marley, by the way. Being the keeper of Chico Hot Springs Resort is an honor, but there are challenges.
Historic properties are always in a process of sort of reinventing themselves, and sometimes you have to change to keep from changing. You don't want to lose that flavor. You want to add to that flavor, but there's always a lot of infrastructure work that's necessary. There's a lot more upkeep. I mean, it's a more expensive property to have just because of the older materials and the time-worn things, whether it's plumbing or electricity or sidewalks or concrete, and you want to add and enhance it so that you become more financially viable, but at the same time, you don't really want to change it. Our focus on Chico has always been to make it more Chico, to honor the legacy that the Art family really put in place, and just move forward.
How do you know how to keep the balance between old and new?
The urge to update has never been there for me. I think it was really Sebring that identified it. But, you know, what's the heart and soul of Chico? What did it look like? What did it feel like? And then go back to those roots and really enhance the flavor from the very beginning. But as you're making your improvements, use the highest quality things you can find instead of cutting corners, whether it's carpets or draperies. Find those period pieces, replace your furniture with really elegant pieces that also really atone to the architectural language that's already been established. And when I say make Chico more Chico, that's what I mean, really continue to fix up the infrastructure. But at the same time, when you're making physical changes, always think about what that flavor was. You know, it was this Victorian lady who met this rogue cowboy, and she was a teetotaler and he was a drinker and a hard liver, and she tried to gentrify him. And you can see that in the lobby. You see touches of this Western lodge, and then you see these Victorian pieces, and they work, which it's a really odd blend. But when you start identifying what it really was and how far she got, and actually after he passed, she took down the bar and got rid of the alcohol, and for a long time it was more of a hospital. So there was a clash of the titans, really, and you can see it and taste that flavor all the way through.
Chico is obviously a really popular place, because even when I moved here 20 years ago, everybody said, you have to go to Chico Hot Springs. That is where you have to go. And it continues. It's 20 years later, and it's 120 plus years later from when it first started. Why do you think people keep coming and keep repeating their traditions and celebrations here?
That's a great question. I think Montana's steeped in tradition. I think people honor those. But for most people, Chico, even from your first time, you recognize it as a really safe place. So it's a good place to run to and regroup and hide, or a place to go romance. And there's something about the property in itself, the physical plant, that makes you feel proprietary about it. And I've seen that with brand new employees. I've seen it with guests that have never been here. And I see it with return guests. You actually feel a part of it. You feel like you own part of it, and you get proprietary and protective of it.
With perfect timing, Sebring Davis has stepped into the room. These days, Sebring is the director of marketing at Chico Hot Springs, but she continues to pursue her passion for writing. She is editor emeritus of Western Art and Architecture and the Dining Out columnist for Big Sky Journal. In 2003, she authored a Montana table, recipes from Chico Hot Springs Resort. She now has a current project that is a follow-up to this book. You just came out with a new cookbook, The Western Kitchen. I feel like it's a family album, and it encapsulates a lot of the memories and stories that happened here at Chico. How did this come to be?
Well, some of it came to be with this particular new book because we were interested in updating our menu. We were interested in updating the profile of Chico with a book that would really capture an experience. And the whole experience isn't just about the food, it's about the place. And so we wanted a book this time to give the feeling of being at our annual block party or walking through the gardens or spending time with family, exploring our wagons that we have for overnight visitors, and also just something that is a reminder of this place. People are giving it to friends saying, we had such a wonderful time here. It's like a legacy piece is really how I feel, and I hope it'll last for a long time.
From the annual block party to classic recipes to sharing memories of being at the resort, what else does this new cookbook highlight?
Well, many of those classic recipes appear in this cookbook, this new cookbook as well. What was missing is the fact that we have this gorgeous 1-acre garden that we dedicate a staff and time and that our chefs love to be able to have access to. It includes one geothermal greenhouse that's heated by the runoff from our hot springs pools and another that's a seasonal greenhouse that just for delicate plants like peppers and certain kinds of basil and our gardener Jeannie Duran's precious melons. She grows melons that she hammocks on a vertical trellis. So we really wanted to showcase those kind of details that we really haven't talked about before. And 13 years ago with our other cookbook were really projects that were in their infancy. And now we've completely developed our opportunity to use the garden in different facets in the restaurant. And so that other cookbook will phase out. And once those copies are finished, and this one will become the replacement.
With Chico Hot Springs steeped in history, what are some of the classics served in the dining room?
It would start with the fennel breadsticks. Those will never go away. And it would likely also start with the Chico spinach salad, which is a creamy Italian dressing with our homegrown spinach tossed together. And then the beef Wellington. The beef Wellington, the spinach salad, those breadsticks, and then finishing with the orange flambé. Those things are treasured. They've been on the menu since 1972, maybe 1973, but they're just beloved. And if our guests ever noticed that we took them off the menu, I think we would have a riot or at least a big letter writing campaign.
The Western Kitchen begins with the category of brunch. Sebring explains why.
Chico is famous for Sunday brunch, and what a great way to start the day. And that's how I pictured this book coming together from the perspective of a guest or if I were entertaining family and friends and inviting them to come to our place, which we feel is like a home to us. I actually get teary thinking about that. And so my perspective was to present it as if I were entertaining family and friends. And what a great way to start the day with brunch. Yeah. And so it seemed like a logical step for us.
Now Sebring shares with us the process of bringing this book to life as compared to her first Chico Hot Springs book, A Montana Table.
This was easier, actually, because I feel so intimately connected with the subject matter. And although I think the staff thought I was pretty crazy when I would be pulling tables out onto the lawn or telling everyone to wear a certain kind of shirt so that they matched for the photo shoot. And I think that they thought it was helter-skelter. They had no idea what I was really doing. But now that we put it all together in the book, our staff has said, wow, it really shows who we are and it tells our story. And I think they don't think I'm as crazy as it seemed in the summer that Lynn and I worked on this together, because the photo schedule was really demanding, and Lynn Donaldson's so talented and she's really in demand shooting for a lot of other publications and for her own creative work. So she and I had to really compress the photographs to happen in basically 6 weeks. And of course, everyone wants summer to be represented well.
Not only summer, but the Western Kitchen also represents spring, fall, and winter well. Now that the book is reality, What are Sebring's wants for her readers?
One of the things I love most about cookbooks is, unlike a novel or a work of nonfiction that you just put on a shelf, Chico has a cookbook that people will use, and I hope that they'll recreate either experiences or memories that they've had here when they get back home, and that they'll share it with other people. And that's one of the things that I love about a cookbook, is that it's useful and timeless and something that you would be happy to pass on. And I hope some of the recipes become recipes that people add to with their own creativity and continue to pass on as well.
And for Chico Hot Springs, Colin speaks of the future.
We don't have any real major expansion plans, but we'd like to become more sustainable as time goes on with this land that we've purchased. We're going to put in much larger gardens up there, try to grow some root vegetables and come up with some cash crops that we can actually benefit from and pay for that land, which is important to us. Continuing to develop the hiking pass and the horse pass, the mountain biking, just to really take that land to a different level is important. We'd like to add a poultry operation where not only would we raise our own eggs, but also you could check in at 4 o'clock with your son or your daughter and go up and help us gather eggs. So it becomes interactive, hands-on aspect, but we want it to pay for itself. It's not a hobby farm that we're looking to do. We're working on those wagons right now, and we'll probably continue to enhance that project for the next couple years and develop it, but the wagons will be online in the spring, these 5 different Conestoga wagons. So that's a big piece of what we're doing, but we still are going back and finding the things that we can do better or need more love or need more Chico, like you and I talked about earlier.
Sebring adds her thoughts on how to make Chico more Chico.
We try to source as many local farms and ranch products that we can to supplement our garden. One of our best relationships is with Barney Creek Livestock, and they're 8 miles down the road.
Right.
And they have basically a grass-fed beef program, and we work with them to buy a whole cow or 3. We have our own cows, and then we work to use every aspect of the animal in preparation for special items on the menu. We use Paradise Valley Wolf Ridge Lamb, which is another small rancher, and Trout Culture, which is also here in Paradise Valley, and we're really proud to say that our trout tastes like trout and not like a farm-fed creature. Though they're farm-fed, they're all organic and really delicious. So we really try to focus on providing the freshest, best seasonal products, and if they're from our neighbors, then that's even better.
We're just really thrilled to be part of it and continue this legacy that was created before we got here. And it's a huge responsibility. It's a huge responsibility. It belongs to Montana, and you work for 1 million people. Once everybody's got a thought or an opinion or wants to help you run your business, and you have to listen to each one carefully. And you never know who's going to walk through the door, you know, whether it's the rancher that has been coming here forever, the person who's here for the first time, somebody that's coming here to grieve. We were talking today at our meeting. This girl called today to make a room reservation for her mother, and her mother's health is failing, and it's on her mother's bucket list to come here. She's never come. And she just created this great connection with Debbie at the front desk. And Debbie's like, if we have to build you a room for your mom, we're going to get her in here. And she left sticky notes for everybody on every computer. If a room comes up on this day, I want this room. And it popped up. Actually, one of the chalets popped up. And then the whole conversation came up. She goes, we have to put flowers. We have to put a new cookbook. And she's telling us what we have to do for this guest that's coming because she's so enamored of her. And that's what Chico does.
I'll echo a little what Colin is saying, in that what I love best about this place are the stories that we hear from our guests and from our staff as well, and the stories that we've built raising our 2 daughters and raising our marriage as well in this place. And some of those stories should be right out of a movie. I mean, people have met here and married, and they've had their own kids. We have one couple who met and married at Chico, and their children also work at Chico. And one of their daughters was married here last year. And I just think that's the beauty of this place, that it sticks enough with people that they feel like it's home.
I love it. You two make home for all of us. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Stella.
Welcome back. In this part of the show, we talk to Chef Dave Wells, who heads up the historic dining room and the new tasting room at Chico Hot Springs. I talked to him after I had the honor of experiencing one of his 12-course meals in the intimate tasting room amongst the prize collections of wines carefully secured by Colin Davis. Let's get to know Chef Dave Wells. He begins by telling us how he becomes inspired to cook.
I think just going out and eating things that you really enjoy, and there's kind of a magic behind that where somebody puts something on a plate and you're like, how do they do that? And I guess just trying to learn more about that and see, figure out how they did that, you know.
Well, did your mom cook, or was there a grandmother or an auntie or somebody in your life just said, Dave, come on into the kitchen and help me cook? Or were you in there saying, God, what are you doing? Let me know. Let me find out.
My mom always cooked growing up, and she loves cooking as well. So I guess probably that's where it all started, sitting there having mom's biscuits and gravy on the weekend and stuff for breakfast. You know, I still think she makes the best biscuits and gravy. It was one of those things where you try and replicate it, you never can.
Well, and it's biscuits and gravy which leads me to believe that you're from the South. Where are you from?
I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Did you help her cook? Were you in the kitchen with her?
I'd be in the kitchen with her. I'm not sure if I actually helped her cook. I've probably gotten her way more than anything, but she would let me think that I was helping her.
Obviously, it just rubbed off on you. So you then left Tennessee and then went out in the world. What did you end up doing?
I was living in Colorado for a while. Got really into fly fishing. And that's what eventually led me to Montana. Kind of worked various jobs as fly fishing guide for a little bit. And, you know, one day got a phone call from a friend of mine when I was living in Bozeman, and she needed a dishwasher, and told her I could help her out through the week. You know, it was only supposed to be for a week. I was helping them wash dishes and then helping them do a little bit of prep, and started seeing how they did things, and really got me interested in the kitchen, in the professional kitchen. So,
well, did they finally eventually let you into the kitchen?
I went from dishwasher to doing some prep and then working saute. And
how long ago was this?
This would have been probably about 12 years ago.
I mean, to me, that just boggles my mind, because again, the level of food that I tasted last night, I'm thinking in less than 10 years, you've been able to put this all together and do things that I think even people who've been in their kitchen all their lives cannot create. Can you tell me where you worked at?
My very first job?
Yes.
Was actually at the Naked Noodle in Bozeman.
Okay.
And then from there, I guess I just got kind of lucky. A friend of mine that was working there went to work out at a place called Papoose Creek Lodge. And he got me in the kitchen there. And they had me working in the morning and pretty much gave me free rein. So I got to work with a lot of ingredients that I'd never heard of before and was working with seasonal items. And so it was a big jump to go from a place like the Naked Noodle to Papoose Creek Lodge. And I guess I just got kind of lucky there, to where I was able to jump into something that I wasn't necessarily prepared for or qualified to do. But yeah, that's what really helped me. Over the past 5 years is really when everything was started changing. I was working in a little market up in the Rattlesnake in Missoula. And from looking at the place, it doesn't seem like much, but the chef there was very adamant about everything being from scratch and everything being as seasonal as possible. And so from there, it was doing the same kind of thing, where it's just from scratch cooking, paying attention to what's in season, trying to use local product as much as possible. And that really started making me really pay attention more to what I was cooking and thinking about how I cooked. And then from there, I went and worked at a Relais and Chateau out in the Bitterroot. And that's really, I'd say, where I got most of my education was working with the chefs there. You know, we had a menu that changed every day, and it was all seasonal and it was all very fine ingredients. And I was able to learn a lot while I was there.
The tasting room, the size of a large kitchen, seats up to 6 people, providing intimacy. Racks of wine, from popular to esoteric to collectible, line the wall. In the center is a tall stone table, flanked with cushy blue velvet ring-back chairs. The 12-course menu is too long to describe here, but each course was several bites, just enough to tantalize your interest and satisfy your taste buds. Just to pique your interest, courses included golden trout roll on a steelhead skin chicharrone, sweet crab in a wonton cup, crowning a swirl of corn puree, and the chef's rendition of s'mores presented in an elevated, deconstructed style. The wines Colin and his staff chose to pair with the dinner became a well-orchestrated ingredient to each dish. So how does the menu vary?
It changes a little bit every single time. There's certain dishes that have been on there for a while, but there's always at least a couple of dishes that change. But, you know, lately we have been doing the pheasant a lot. We've been doing Wagyu beef a lot, you know, but those things will change as well. It's just basically what's in season, what I can get, and then we go from there and create a menu.
Do you create the menu and then he pairs the wines, or does he... Okay, so he does. You just say, okay, this is what we're having, and then he goes into the cellar and he pulls out the bottles of wine that he thinks matches.
A lot of times, on very short notice, I'll email him a menu the day of, and he'll go and pair it.
On the tasting menu, Chef Wells served a McFarland Farms pheasant breast with farro, chard, pistachio, and juice. He shares what steps went into its preparation.
Well, it's a longer process than just pan roasting it. You know, we brine it and then sous vide it and then pan roast it. So it's trying to keep as much moisture in the pheasant as possible. So brining it really helps. Of course, as we do that, we're trying to infuse flavor as well. So there's fresh herbs and things of that nature in the brine, as well as in the bag when we sous vide.
Well, it was extremely succulent. And then tell me about the farro. It was, to me, a very delicate farro.
It's from Timeless Seeds here in Montana. So for me, it makes sense to have these ingredients that go together. You're very likely to find a pheasant out in the field where they're growing this. So, and then using the rainbow chard from our garden, it really all just things that are already here on the landscape in Montana. So it makes sense that they would pair together.
Well, and I thought the juice was extremely complicated in flavor. Say I tasted the field and yet there was game. I mean, in a good way, the meat flavors. What was in that broth?
So again, it's tricks. It's making stock and then infusing it with a lot of herbs and then heavily reducing that. So it's a big concentration of flavor.
And it was stock from the bones of the pheasant?
Yes.
So these are multiple steps. And how long do you think it takes to just complete a dish like this?
You know, you'll spread it out over a few days, but to make the stock would be a couple of days. To do the pheasant itself, you can accomplish that in a day. It brines fairly quickly. You brine it for a couple of hours, and then we'll sous vide it for about an hour and a half.
All the courses demonstrated craft and care in preparation, but the dish that perhaps most intrigued me was the George Bank scallop with mountain rose apple and kabushu, a citrus fruit prized in Japan.
There was a very interesting, I would say, aspect of your scallops that you made last night. And on top of the scallops, you had these spears that looked like roe eggs, but they were created by you. What were they?
It's just a technique called cold oil spherification. So basically, we take ginger juice and reduce that down. We'll add a little bit of candy ginger as well. And then you mix it with agar-agar to solidify it. And as you drop it into cold oil, it makes little pearls. And it'll solidify by the time, like if you have like a column of cold oil, when you drop it in, it'll turn into a pearl.
And you're dropping in with a dropper?
Syringe, yes. By the time it hits the bottom, it'll have solidified. And yeah, there you have your caviar.
You are now a part of the Western Kitchen Cookbook that just came out. What was your involvement with this particular book?
I think my involvement was showcasing like our garden and where we're heading, trying to use more local ingredients, more seasonal stuff, and really trying to focus on like Montana cuisine.
And what is your definition of Montana cuisine? I would think that the pheasant may represent that, trout and on the land, and there's game.
I'd agree. Montana is definitely trout, pheasant, game. I think that using like farro, grains, different grains, lentils, seasonal things like mushrooms, the berries, things that grow here naturally. I think all those things have a place on the plate here.
Do you direct what's being grown in that garden?
I don't direct what's being grown. I collaborate with Jeannie, our gardener, and we talk about things that we can do. There's things that I would like to see grown, and then she'll tell me whether or not that's possible.
In the dining room, not only is Chef Wells edging in new flavors, he still needs to continue to serve up longtime favorites.
There are dishes, the beef Wellington, the fennel breadsticks, the orange flambé. These are old, iconic dishes that are here. How long did it take you to just get those established?
Not long. I actually came here back in 2004 with my grandfather and shared a beef Wellington with him. So that part of Chico, that's the history, is something that I was already familiar with.
What have you now added to the menu? What is your signature dishes that you have included now?
We do a local flat iron steak now. We also do a duck two ways where it's a seared breast, and then we do a confit leg with an orange reduction.
There are new dishes on the menu, but what is in store for the future?
I just like to see us using more local stuff, being able to involve more Montana ranchers, more Montana agriculture, just being able to support our neighbors, and especially working with people that practice sustainable agriculture.
Thank you to Chef Wells for talking to us. Continuing with the sense of sustainable, I want to take you back to Sebring's cookbook, The Western Kitchen, to a sustained memory. The recipes, photographs, and most of all the stories cook up nostalgia. Here is a story Sebring shares from Christmas Eve in 1995 at Chico Hot Springs.
Oh, yes, that's my favorite story, actually. And of course, that's why I shared it in the book. And it is an emotional experience to be part owner of this place, because I think that we're the keeper of people's memories and family experiences. And one of the things I learned while I was a waitress at Chico back in 1995 is the tradition that so many of our guests carry on. And during that time, I met people who were coming to Chico for Christmas for the last 30 years. And that was their tradition. And Christmas Eve at Chico Hot Springs was how they wanted to spend their time and to wake up first thing in the morning and have the hot springs waiting for them. And the snowstorm on this particular year delivered like no one else could have prescribed it. And it was a long time ago, and we're at the end of the road, and the access to the valley was a little more limited. So this snowstorm came out of nowhere. All the old timers said it was the 100-year storm. They'd never seen anything like it. And on this particular night, it must have been 3 feet of snow that fell. And so the plows were not out, and it ended up there was enough snow that they couldn't actually plow the roads in time to access this end of the road place. And so the dining room was full, and we were all serving up food and just having a great time. The hotel was full, so all the rooms were reserved. And it turned out as the night got later that there was no way for anyone to leave the property. And so
awesome.
The snow just kept coming down, and in some situations in our modern day world, I think people would have been upset or irritated in some way. But in this case, it was just a gift, and we rolled out extra cots and blankets and flashlights and finished dinner by candlelight, loaded up the lobby with as many sleeping options as we could, took some of our rooms that are of the most basic rooms and outfitted them for more guests, put out coffee and hot chocolate, and we just turned it into a big Christmas party.
May you be snowed in somewhere this holiday season, gathered with loved ones. Happy holidays to all of you from Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. Theme music has been produced by Parker Brown. Additional funding has been provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.